My name is Keating Kuhn. This is the Science of Building Your Nest. I'm sure you guys have seen the cups in the background on a lot of these. Most of the time, it happens to have Rachel Kelly's Sipley Tea. So, welcome, Rachel. Excited to talk the world of tea with you.
Thanks for having me, Keating. Exciting to be here.
Well, I'll let you kind of steer into, your origination in the tea world. Probably started from your love of tea, but why you eventually decided to start your own business revolving your own tea.
So it goes way back. I have been drinking tea pretty much my whole life. My mother's from New England, and so we always grew up drinking tea with her and my grandmother. So it really is in my blood. As I got older and got into, life as it is, I made a natural transition to coffee, as most do. And it wasn't until I started experiencing some autoimmune conditions that my doctor actually suggested I lay off the coffee, to which I was like, oh my gosh, what am I gonna do? So naturally, I gravitated towards tea because of my roots. And once I did, it opened up a whole universe for me. I have a background in science journalism, so when I explore topics, I go deep. And I really learned so much just by making that shift about the tea industry and what we're actually consuming with these just modern commercial products.
Yeah, no, it's a wild world when you can get into it, because from the health aspects of tea, there's many scientific journals about it, but then you look at the commercialization of tea in the US especially, and you realize that not all products are the same. They might be called one thing, but you at the end of the day don't know what you're drinking.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and everything from the type of tea, the flavors that are added to it, how it's packaged, they all have an impact on what you're actually putting in your body.
Definitely. And I think where it becomes interesting is the US in general is are big coffee drinkers, but the people who love tea, that's basically all they want in life, is just to not only have tea in the morning, but for lunch and for dinner as well. So it's a great market, and it kind of takes more of an Asian or a European culture aspect, but bringing it to the US is something that, for me especially, who loves coffee, I took a liking to your tea immediately. And so, from the organic side, I think that's probably where the health aspects that you had researched, you were able to dive right in. So tell us about your tea specifically and why it might be different than the other teas that are out there.
I'd love to, and I'll make the comment that the US definitely is more of a coffee consuming nation, whereas majority of the other countries actually prefer tea, Canada, Europe, lots of other places, big tea drinkers, India, China. What they're finding though with these younger generations is that they're going back to tea. So it is really fascinating to see the culture start to shift a bit here in the US. What we have done to be a part of that is how we've really curated a product that we feel really good about introducing into our market. And so we kind of have three values that we live by. And the first value is clean. We are an incredibly clean, pure tea company. All of our products are tested for pesticides, mycotoxins, heavy metals, and other impurities. We also don't use any artificial flavor oil. A lot of teas, and I mean a lot, are using these flavor oils that are really, I mean, very synthetically made. And so you really want to stray away from flavor oils. Chai, and I'll just take a moment to show off our herbal chai. Chai is actually one of the biggest ones that uses flavor oils. And so we really try to avoid that. We do have two teas that have a natural flavor in them. They are organic compliant. And that's our Scottish caramel, which uses almond extract, and then our London Fog, which is a version of an Earl Grey, and that has bergamot oil in it. But outside of that, we are flavor oil free. So clean is really big. And our herbal chai is just one of the best chais on the market that you can actually experience like the full breadth of the spiciness without having that artificial flavoring. Our second big value is sustainability. And so we really make an emphasis on our packaging. And you can see our packaging. These are our refillable tins. And so how it works is you purchase a tin, and then you can actually purchase a refill bag after that. All of our bags, our bulk bags and our refill bags, are made out of a compostable material that's derived from sugar cane. Amazing. And so it's great. Yeah, you throw it in the compost and it's gone.
Well, I know you spent a lot of time trying to find something that you could get your hands on that would at least check that box of sustainability.
Exactly. We went really deep on the actual like packaging. We really wanted to make sure that it was sustainably made and that it was also made in the U.S. That's a really big deal for us.
And that if you're doing the testing and making sure that the heavy metals aren't there and the mycotoxins aren't there, the material of the bag that it's in has to be, you have to be aware that it's going to keep your product safe.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So what's your third?
So the third one is naturally being delicious. So I am a certified tea sommelier. So I have blended all of these teas. And again, because we don't use the flavor oils, it adds like a natural complication to it. You know,
that's kind of fake it.
Exactly. We can't hit the easy button, you know? And we're also using very pure natural herbs as well. So the ratios that we're using and the blending has to be very, very precise. But we have some excellent blends. I'll showcase our other one. The lemongrass green is one of our newer ones. And we kept getting requests for green teas that would be a really nice iced tea. And so that one is just superb. And it is our Rwanda green, which Rwanda actually makes amazing green tea. They have a beautiful, sustainable tea farm out there. So we're using their green tea and blending that with lemon balm, lemon verbena, and lemongrass to create this like very zesty, citrusy experience that you can have both hot or iced.
And yeah, so, I'm sure in Texas people are knocking down doors to get iced tea. That's the staple, not only in Texas, but the South in general just loves their iced tea.
Absolutely.
Most people will go to Lipton, right? Which is the worst.
Bless them. Hey, I grew up on it. I get it. Yeah.
And now you've fused your own matchup to kind of compete with the Lipton lovers.
Yes, that's what we're hoping for. Amazing. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can speak from experience that you've checked the box of being delicious for sure.
Thanks.
You know, from the mycotoxin and heavy metal aspect, I know there's been a lot of studies about, you know, people feeling anxious when they drink coffee, and it might not be the caffeine necessarily, but it actually can be the mold that's affecting their body. So how do you go through that process of verifying that your tea is is clean?
Right. It's a great question. So we work with brokers out of different countries that actually help us do all of our testing. And they're actually tested at multiple points. So they are tested before they come into the country, and they're tested after they get into the U.S. to make sure that no mycotoxins have built up in that transit time. Yeah. The other point that's really important that we haven't totally covered is we do all of our herbal tea and tea in general as loose leaf. And there's a huge reason why we do not use bags. And that is because of the toxins, the microplastics, the bleach, all of these terrible things that are actually found in tea bags that people are consuming every day. And you are steeping this in hot water, which is the perfect extraction for any of these toxins to let loose and then be freely absorbed into your body.
Yep. Yeah, and that actually goes into a great conversation, which is what water are you using for the steeping process, which we've talked a lot about water over the years, and I think that goes hand in hand with the tea that you're drinking. If you're drinking very healthy tea, you really want to make it with the healthiest, cleanest water that you can get your hands on.
Definitely. I always say that water is the most important ingredient of tea. So the big thing is, do not use tap water. Please use some sort of filtration when you are brewing tea. There's actually this excellent site. It's Environmental Working Group, EWG.org, where you can go and plug in your zip code and you can look at the contaminants in your tap water. And it is shocking. Absolutely shocking. And this is the same water that we're consuming, we're bathing our children in, we're brushing our teeth with. And so a totally separate topic from toxins in tea, but our toxins in water are very, very real. So we should make a valiant effort to use a really good filtration system when we are going to consume water, whether it's in tea or on its own. So
certainly. And yeah, we talk a lot on the show about the importance of what goes in your body. And obviously air quality is an utmost importance. But when you talk about the other aspect of things that you put in your body, the food and the water are huge. And so, you know, I think when it comes down to the water that's coming from the city, they might not always have the cleanest filtration. And so, you know, what you're now heating up to 190 or to boiling, I'm sure there's certain things inside that water that probably affect the body more when you boil them. Right. I love to say that we're all walking, you know, science experiments in general, but from the water aspect, that's a huge tangent that is so important to, you know, what you're steeping in your tea.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's huge. And I really like to say that reverse osmosis and distillation are the gold standard. But really, if you can't get your hands on those, at least use some sort of charcoal filter that will filter out a large amount of the chlorine, because the studies, even in the mainstream community, that are coming out about chlorine consumption are very shocking.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, especially from the clean aspect, that's a huge topic of discussion with the people that are, you know, basically buying your tea, because you want them to have the full bodied experience. And the water that we drink is going to impact how we feel on a day-to-day basis. Hopefully everyone's drinking enough water. And I think the studies out there show that almost no one is drinking enough water, because you really should be drinking water at all points during the day. But especially when you're adding tea to that water, you want to make sure that it's the, that you're getting the absolute cleanest that you can be. So I love that. When it comes down to how you are experiencing the tea, I know you have some rituals that you love to do when you drink your tea. You know, you talk often about the fast-paced lifestyle that us as Americans live, and now really globally. But when we go back to the origination of tea, it was a much slower lifestyle. And so people were able to steep their tea and, you know, take moments of time in their day to enjoy the little things, which happened to be tea. So can you tell us a little bit about how you enjoy your tea?
Yeah, absolutely. And this could be a really big conversation, as simple as it sounds. I've actually done entire tea rituals here locally in Austin to really help people experience not only tea to its fullest, but just that moment of peace that tea culture was actually born out of. You know, there's an old proverb that says, sometimes, and I'm going to paraphrase, but essentially it says, sometimes you think you need the tea, but what you actually need is the tea ceremony. And what it means is what you're actually craving is that moment of peace and that moment to sit with yourself. And that's where tea culture was really born out of. The Buddhist monks used green tea years and years and years ago to meditate. That's one of the things that actually popularized tea so much. Hmm. And the reason they used green tea was, one, because of the caffeine in it. It would help them stay alert to meditate. But two, because of the theanine that's paired with that caffeine. And so it was that perfect blend that helped them stay in that meditative process. And so from there was born this beautiful culture of tea. And now when you go to China and experience a gongfu ceremony, or you go to Japan and you experience these matcha ceremonies, they're very intricate multi-step processes that are really designed to fully immerse you in the experience so that you can be very present. And you don't have to go to Japan to experience that moment. We actually have on our instructions little breathing exercises. I call them steeping exercises that you can do when you are steeping your tea. Because tea is not like coffee in the sense of like, hey, throw it in, you know, a drip maker and let it go and then go do all the things that you need to do.
Yeah, or
you
a
know?
Keurig or, you know.
Exactly.
We've commercialized coffee so much where it's let me get the quickest cup of coffee I can and get out the door.
Totally. Like the intention behind tea is to have that moment of pause, have that moment of patience. And if you're making it right, you know, you're doing the long steep. Which we do have all of the steeping instructions on here for those who are needing a little hand-holding during that process. Mm-hmm. But I really invite anyone, when you are enjoying any beverage, it can even be water, to take that moment to be fully present. You know, with tea, I always say, get into your senses. Experience the warmth of the cup. Smell the tea. Allow all of your senses to really like take that moment in. And that I feel like is what our culture is really missing today, when we have this like go, you know, on to the next thing, this like productivity, just like drive, you know, we aren't prioritizing these moments to really take pause. And so that's what I really try to encourage people to do. And with our tea rituals, and we actually do have a ritual tea that I designed with specific herbs to help enhance some of these things that we're talking about. With the ritual tea, you can really take that moment to even manifest, if we want to get into the woo-woo side, which let's go there.
Let's do it, yeah.
Where you're even whispering an intention for the day into your tea before you sip it, you know. During our tea rituals locally, I'll have people draw symbols on their cup that represent what they're trying to call into their life. Mm-hmm. And so you can really take it in a lot of different directions. You can make it as complex as you'd like. You know, the traditional matcha ceremony is like 40 steps. Or you can make it as simplistic as taking 3 deep breaths before you take your first sip.
Yeah, no, and I think especially in the day and age where we think that productivity just means to unleash ourselves at work for 8 hours in a row. You know, there's a lot of studies out there that say, hey, you got to take 5 or 10 minutes every hour and actually take the deep breaths and go for a walk. And, you know, implementing a process of tea to where you spend those 5 or 10 minutes and actually step away from your computer and let your brain relax, you're actually going to be more productive at the end of the day anyway. And especially, you know, in our lifestyle where, we are go, I think, the relaxation, the intentionality and letting the anxiety go. A warm cup of tea, for some reason, is just so much different than holding a warm cup of coffee. It's almost the dynamic nature of the ingredient inside of that cup that makes you have to pause and smell the roses of some sort.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, there are some of those properties within tea, depending on which one you're drinking. You know, is it an herbal tea like our lemongrass green that has the lemon balm that is inherently very calming, or even a ceremonial matcha, which has very high amounts of theanine, like I had mentioned before with the green tea. You know, that certainly helps with that process.
Totally. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, tell us about your matcha, because we were talking earlier about matcha in general. One, that there's a shortage, which if you're not in the tea world, you might not know that, but that there's some counterfeit matchas that you might need to be aware of.
Absolutely. Matcha is a big deal right now. So matcha has become very popular all over the world, actually. And I'm sure most people have seen, you know, there's matcha ice cream, different types of matcha beverages with like strawberry. I mean, they're making like matcha candies, all the things.
Right.
And what's happening is the real high quality matcha, ceremonial grade, comes out of a very specific part of Japan. And how ceremonial matcha is made is they only use the top two leaves of the shade-grown green tea that they use to actually like stone grind the matcha. Well, that only grows once a year. And it's only released like usually June through September. And once that's gone, it's gone. you have to wait for that first flush, again, those two first leaves, to regrow again the next year. Yeah. And so Japan literally cannot keep up with the demand, the global demand of matcha these days. Yeah. And so our ceremonial matcha is direct from Japan. And again, it is that top tier grade. So why does that make a difference? It's very high in theanine. It's very high in chlorophyll because they're doing that shade grown process. It's not as bitter, you know, and it has this sort of like creamy sweetness to it.
Which might not be what people think of matcha when you're, right, when you're saying that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard so many people say, ooh, I don't like matcha. It's really gross. And then I have them try mine. They're like, wait, I didn't know matcha was supposed to taste like that. And so what they're getting, the gross matcha, let's talk about that, because that's really real. As we go through this sort of like matcha shortage, you know, there are multiple grades of matcha. And so ceremonial is the top tier. And that's what we're talking about with the top two leaves. As you go further down on the plant, the leaves get more bitter. Okay. Now that comes with some trade-offs. They do also develop more polyphenols, which are an antioxidant, and they do have more caffeine in them. So, you know, you get a little something, but huge, huge trade-off with the bitterness. So you will typically experience a lower grade matcha, maybe like a culinary grade matcha. That's what they're going to use for like the ice creams, the candies, you know, the donuts, all of the food grade matchas. Mm-hmm. You'll experience that lower stem of the leaves through those products. But with this matcha shortage happening, people are packaging this culinary grade matcha, which isn't necessarily intended to be a beverage grade matcha, and they're selling it as a ceremonial or as a barista grade matcha. And so you really want to watch out for that. And also, you know, when we think about the cleanliness and the quality of the matcha, people are going to be putting out different matchas that are grown in Japan, or excuse me, matchas that are grown in China, and matchas that are grown with different chemicals and whatnot to like try to produce them faster. So now more than ever, it is extremely important to know where your matcha is coming from. Is it organic? And how is it cultivated? What grade is it? All of these things, if you're drinking matcha regularly, you want to be asking these questions.
Yeah, and for someone like yourself that's a tea sommelier, you could probably tell the difference between the ceremonial grade and maybe a culinary grade, or I'll put fake matcha in there because, you know, I feel like that's probably what most people are used to when they hear the word or when they drink it.
Yeah, so when people think of matcha, they usually think of green tea, obviously. So matcha technically means tea powder. And so we were thinking a little bit outside the box on this. And because I am very sensitive to caffeine, and I think a lot of people are, I wanted to create a matcha-like experience, but without the caffeine. And so what came out of that is our red rooibos matcha. And it essentially doesn't have any green tea in it. What we did is we took rooibos, which is an herb out of South Africa, and used that same stone grinding matcha technique that they use in Japan to grind it into a very, very fine particle size. Mm. We did the same thing with rosehip, which is a wonderful herb full of antioxidants, has a little bit of like a tangy flavor to it, very, very high in vitamin C. Ground that into a very fine powder and mix them together. And so you get this really amazing herbal tea experience, but with the body and fullness of a matcha. So you can actually make this into a matcha latte, and wow, you'll do it in the exact same process that you would a regular matcha, which is, for those who aren't familiar with it,
yep,
you take a small amount, maybe half a teaspoon, maybe a teaspoon, and you're actually going to whisk it in water. And then you add milk to it, milk or water, to create like the full cup and the latte experience. The great thing about this is, one, you are reducing steep time. So if you're just trying to run out the door, it's a great way to make a fast cup of tea.
Yep.
And two, because you're actually consuming the powder, you're getting super dense nutrients with this. Now, with an extraction, you're certainly pulling out the nutrients, but it's not the same if you're extracting it in hot water and then you're actually consuming it. So it's a higher dose of nutrients. Rooibos in general is very, very high in antioxidants, so high that they're actually developing different skincare products that can treat sunburns with rooibos. Yeah, it's a very special product. People are seeing it more and more. It's becoming a little more popular in the herbal tea world, but making it as a matcha is certainly outside the box. And so I'm really trying to share this product with people because it is so unique. And again, I feel like it kind of scratches this itch that no other product is doing.
Yeah. And so you were saying earlier too about the basis of matcha is stone grinding green tea. Mm-hmm. And so in the rooibos, you are basically taking a flower, or is it
More like a grass. So technically it's an herb, but it's a grass out of South Africa.
But mm-hmm. it doesn't have the real earthy flavor that maybe I'm picturing in my mind.
It has a very different flavor than a green tea. Cool. It's much more bold, and it has like an inherent sweetness to it as well.
Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a really wonderful bedtime latte. That's kind of my favorite. So I'll do, about a teaspoon of it with some hot water, add my warm milk to it, some honey, a little bit of salt, maybe a scoop of collagen. It is the perfect nightcap.
Is it a good kid drink too?
Oh, it'd be an amazing kid drink. I have a 4-year-old son, and he has grown up on tea. So any of these herbal teas are great kid drinks. I would say mostly our African honey and the red rooibos matcha, because those are very gentle herbs that have a lot of antioxidants in them. You know, other teas that have different properties and herbs you may want to watch out. Like our ritual tea, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that for children because it does have blue lotus in it, which some say can be slightly psychedelic. So maybe avoid that one for the kids.
Yep. That affects more the dreams. I think that's why people mm-hmm. call it psychedelic, right?
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. It's subtle.
Can you tell us about where you had to find your matcha through? Like, you know, back in the day when you first started, I'm sure this was a whirlwind of, man, I want to make sure that my tea is the best out there.
Yeah. It's been a journey really cultivating the partnerships with the different farms and brokers that we use. Yeah. Right now we're direct to Japan. So we're using farms in Japan, and I've been able to meet them through various connections, going to conferences and whatnot. And it's been such a gift to actually develop these relationships and know where things are coming from. You know, I think it's really important. It's just like anything else with our food. You know, it's been a huge calling to know where our meat's coming from. Where is our beef coming from? Get to know your local beef rancher. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same deal with these herbal and tea products. You really want to know where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about the Moon Mama tea as well? Because that's more of a, it's not woman only tea, but it certainly has some enhancements for women.
Absolutely. The Moon Mama tea is a really special tea for us. We really wanted to develop a tea that was specifically for our women community. We are a woman and owned and operated business. And so both of us owners have children. And in that journey, you know, we needed different teas to support us in our pre-pregnancy, pregnancy, lactation time. And so we developed this tea, which has honeybush and raspberry leaf, oat straw, nettle, all of these really, really nutrient-dense herbs to help support a body that is growing another human being or producing milk for another human being. And it's actually even outside of that time. You know, the raspberry leaf is a wonderful uterine toning herb. So even women who are still menstruating, that is a really, really perfect time to drink Moon Mama tea because it's very supportive of that process. So it is targeted towards a women demographic, but I will say it's so delicious. I've certainly had many men drink it.
Totally. No, and I think it's great that you're able to implement tea into so many different environments, because there's probably not too many people out there thinking, how can I take this herb and the medicinal properties that it has and use it for, you know, not only Moon Mama, but just in general, right? There's so many exciting aspects of the, you know, the tea leaf that you can use for a million different things.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to clarify one thing because I think it's really important to understand. Tea is a very specific plant. And then there are herbs. And so when we talk about tea as a whole, we kind of call anything that you steep in warm water a tea. But the truth of the matter is tea is only that one specific plant. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about herbal teas, they're technically in the industry called a tisane. And so I think that's just something worth sharing as people go on their own deep dive in the tea industry. Just beware of things that are always called tea. Sometimes there can be other things in them, and you always want to know exactly what you're drinking.
Yeah, that's a great fun fact. I feel like tisane probably came out of the 70s somehow, but no, that's awesome. You know, grew up with tea, and you know, you went through your own autoimmune issues where you really had to lay off the coffee side and probably went back to tea. And then you went through the process of learning about what's out there and not really wanting to deal with the health consequences that might come from the random teas out there. And so through your process of finding the tea that you wanted to drink, you now saw a complete opportunity in a business way that, hey, I bet there's more people like me that love tea and want to drink the cleanest available.
Absolutely.
Because this podcast is, you know, it's a blend of a lot of different things. The health aspect, and especially on the tea side, that checks the box immediately. But you also have the business side. And, you know, a tea business is probably pretty rare. I'm not in the tea world, so I don't know for sure. But can you tell us a little bit about how you cultivated the business of tea?
Yeah. It's really evolved a lot throughout the years. I took a bit of a ready, fire, aim approach with this business, for those who've read that book. But your description of my journey was actually pretty accurate in that, you know, I shifted to tea. I did a deep dive. I became a certified tea sommelier and realized, wow, I don't want to drink any of the teas that I can go pull off the shelf at the grocery store. And so because of that, I had developed some relationships through my tea sommelier certification. And that's where I started. So I started getting my own tea, and I realized, like, people need to know about this. So I wanted to start educating people about it and really introducing. I was doing it to my friends, and, you know, you were one of them. So you remember, I was very excited about this and extremely passionate about it. And so essentially I thought, hey, like, how can I get this out here and start small just with my local community? And I did that with the farmers market. I think the farmers market is a really beautiful opportunity to introduce products to your community and really talk face-to-face with customers and have those interactions. And so it became such a magical journey for me because I would bring in these teas from different countries and I would share them with people at the farmers market, and I would be able to get this live feedback, and I would prepare them in different ways and teach them. I would even give them little recipe cards on how they could make them when they got home. And so from there, the business really evolved. When COVID happened, I stepped away from the farmers market. And because the Austin farmers markets have such a rich tourist environment, I was able to actually just use a website and get orders domestically through that.
Yeah, you had to pivot.
I did. Yep. And I'm grateful that we survived that because there were many farmers market businesses that did not. So,
yeah, and that's the struggle of small businesses in general, right? I mean,
yes.
You know, something like COVID was completely out of the norm of why most small businesses may fail before that, you know, first year or those first 5 years. But something like tea, you know, where you had really made your, you know, made your first couple years through the farmers market and basically that homegrown outreach and having to pivot on the fly, you know, kudos to you for figuring it out.
Yeah. I mean, we made it work, and we had an extremely loyal customer base, which I'm really, really grateful for. Yeah. After that, you know, we started shifting to wholesale. And so now you can find us here in Austin in several local coffee shops, Radio, Praxis, Walton's Fancy and Staple. And we're very, very intentional about who we're working with, because we really only want to partner with companies that really prioritize quality products. But many times, again, you mentioned small businesses. It is tough, and I have a lot of respect for them. Many coffee shops and restaurants in general, they're thinking about the bottom dollar. And I have taken many meetings where I've said, hey, listen, if you are just looking to get the cheapest tea, that is not us. Yep. We're not going to be a good partnership. Now, if you are looking for a really high quality product and someone who's going to come in and educate your staff on how to prepare this and how to talk to customers about the beauty found in these products, let's do this. You know, we're a match. Yep. So
yeah, no, and that's fantastic too, to get your name out there. Cause you know, so many coffee shops in Austin, it's not usually, you're definitely not going after the Starbucks, and we really don't have a lot of as many Starbucks as a big city might, just because we have so many of these small business coffee shops. And certainly there's, you know, a certain amount of them that are smaller than others and don't have multiple locations, but, Radio Coffee is, you know, one of the favorites. And, you know, to plug yourself with these local brands that are kind of staples now in the Austin area, I think is a great way to get your name out and really start to facilitate more people drinking your tea, falling in love with it, and then going directly to the source.
Yeah.
Can you go into the steeping process a little bit? Because, you know, someone like me who didn't really know the tea game, I knew how to make my coffee every morning, but until you taught me, I really wasn't familiar with the steeping process. And you're going into these small coffee shops and teaching the staff how to prepare your tea to where the end user is going to get the best experience possible. So can you give us an overview of the best way to steep your tea?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it can be complicated because not every tea is steeped the same way.
That's right.
So we do have all of our instructions on the side panel. The amount of tea, the temperature of the water, and how long you steep it really vary based on what type of tea you're doing. So any sort of herbal tea that would be caffeine free, you actually do want to boil that tea because you want to get a really good extraction to be able to draw out the flavor and the nutrients of that tea. And steep time is usually much longer on those as well. For our herbal chai, you know, we're steeping that for 10 minutes. Where our milk oolong, which we're enjoying right now, that one, you're actually only going to steep that at 190. That's a partially oxidized tea that doesn't need a long steep either. And so you
steep it. It's only for a couple minutes.
Only a couple minutes. And then you can actually even re-steep that, you know, for the teas that are using like a very high quality variety of tea and it's not fully oxidized, you can get multiple steeps out of it too. And then you have, you know, our Scottish caramel, which is a fan favorite. I call it the gateway tea. Anyone tells me they don't like tea, I'm like, wait a minute, I've got a tea for you. Yep. That's made with a pu'er, and a pu'er is a fermented black tea. And so that one is a little heartier. It's not going to get as bitter on you, so you can steep that one a little bit longer. Traditionally, they do say to steep it for a very short time, but if you're looking for a really bold extraction, that one is fantastic because it does kind of scratch that itch for anyone who's used to coffee, but gives you that full, full flavor and tea experience.
And one thing that most people might not do if they're drinking bag tea is add milk to it. And mm-hmm. I know that's something that when you were making me tea a long time ago, you would put a little splash of milk, and my Lord, what a difference it makes. So tell us a little machine that you normally use to spin the milk up and froth it, and what it kind of does to the enjoyment of the tea.
Yeah. You know, I think that this is actually one of those fine details that does make the difference on just how rich a cup of tea can be, especially for people who are used to a coffee drink. You know, somebody who wants a latte, you know, this no milk, like no fluff oolong might not do it for him. Whereas you take, again, like that pu'er or, you know, one of our rich herbal blends, like our herbal chai, and add that nice fat to it, that milk, whether it's a plant-based milk or a dairy milk, that creaminess and richness really helps with just creating that luxurious experience. And also, you're introducing the fats into it as well, which help deliver the nutrients into your body even better. So there are a couple different facets there. There's like the actual enjoyment of the tea, and then there is the nutrition accessibility as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I know in some of your teas, I sprinkle a little bit of Himalayan salt in there just to richen up that taste. And at least for me, when I put milk in tea, it actually gives me a little bit of a it staves off the hunger for a few more hours just because there's actually some calories in it. Mm-hmm. So the fact that, you know, in the morning now I'm drinking my normal water and tea, it's not as, you know, coffee is a diuretic. And so it's actually going to do the opposite of what you're using, you know, the base of coffee, you're using water as well, but now it's not even hydrating you. With tea, it's the exact opposite. So
yeah,
there's so many beautiful things about tea, not only on the health side, but then, you know, also just the ceremonial aspect of it and taking a breath in our busy lives. Is there anything else that we haven't covered in terms of tea or the business of tea or Rachel Kelly, anything?
Well, you know, I just want to build upon your little morning ritual that you described, because I will even add more than just milk and salt. I love that you mentioned salt, because I actually do that to almost every cup of tea that I make now, because it does open up the palate a bit more so you can experience like the richness and the flavor.
Yeah.
And then it's adding some electrolytes to the water as well. So I will add milk, salt, collagen, you know, honey, of course, or maple syrup, depending on, you know, what you're feeling at that moment.
Yeah, very, very popular in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I will even add, and this can be somewhat controversial, but I will even add like a little bit of bitters. I have a friend who has a wonderful company called Zhuzh that they have different flavored bitters, and they have a cacao bitters. And it just adds this wonderful dynamic, and it also helps with enhancing your digestion as well.
And that's a local Austin company as well. Can you spell Zhuzh?
Zhuzh. It's J-U-J.
Perfect.
Yeah. And it's a phenomenal product. So I definitely give that one my support. But there are a lot of different things. You can also add MCT oil if you're looking to, or just plain coconut oil if you're looking for a little more fats in your mornings. So yeah, you really can add a lot of different things to it to create that almost like breakfast in a cup experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of the things that, you know, probably a lot of people in Austin do on a morning basis as is, right? You want to get started with a healthy dose of a lot of different things in the morning to really get the energy flowing and get the synapses of your brain start flowing. So, you know, to be able to add it just to one cup, you're absolutely right. It's breakfast in a cup.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it's another great one. Lion's mane mushroom powder.
Yeah.
That's a really good one too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It really enhances the cognitive abilities and whatnot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're almost taking it more like a culinary experience at that point. And I'm sure you have many different blends that you've tried and some that probably taste a little bit better than others, but I think it's more just an experiment with, you know, these tins, they come with what, 40 cups of tea roughly?
It depends on which one, you know, there's variation in that, but it's usually at least 25 to 30 servings.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not exclusively for breakfast either. Another big thing is mocktails or cocktails. Yep. You can really go either way with that.
Yep.
But we ran an entire event here locally where we made different mocktails with our tea, and you can get really, really creative with that kind of stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy when you open yourself up to different drinks. I think most of us are just normalized by coffee. And when we go to Starbucks, we have our favorite drink and, you know, we go about our business. But to look behind the scenes and see if there's a healthier alternative, not only from the things that we drink, but then the water itself as well, to have an option like this that we know is heavy metal free and mycotoxin free. I mean, I know from my anxiety level, I couldn't tell if it was just because of the amount of caffeine that I had in my coffee or if it maybe was coming from mold, but I can definitely tell the difference when I drink a cup of coffee versus a cup of tea, how it makes me feel energetically. So can't thank you enough for creating something like this for all of us to enjoy. And thank you for coming on the show as well. Can you tell us how we can find Sipley?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are sipsipply.com, S-I-P-S-I-P-L-Y. And you can also find us on Instagram @sipsipply. Perfect. Mm-hmm. And thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks, Rachel. Mm-hmm.